plate a potential nugget.
A related question here, David, is very often when you're in the heat of a moment, of an interaction, very often we aren't mindful of how we are coming across. You know, a lot of, let's say, if we stick with this metaphor of the net, I would imagine some of the stuff that transpires is often in the blind spot of that person. You know, I don't even know that I'm doing this. Any reflections on that, just in terms of tuning in to what's going on?
Well, I'll answer that in a minute, but I think the bigger problem is we often don't know what we feel. And I think we need to start with being aware of our feelings. And not infrequently, when Carol and I work with each other and we get into our own disagreements, one of us will say, wait a minute, I'm not sure I know what I'm feeling. And we stop. And we sort of ask ourselves, I wonder what I'm feeling. So that's the major problem. When you're talking about blind spots, one of the interesting things about this mode of interaction is if we can get into a conversation, I'm likely to discover my blind spots. So let's say, and again, I'm making this up. You're not giving me enough real data that I can use. You're too nice. So I'm going to make this up. So let's assume that you've done something that's really bothered me. I say, hey, Deepak, I really feel hurt by that, and so on. And you say, Jim, I'm sorry. And then you might say, gee, what's interesting, David, is this is the third time that you said that. I wonder what's going on. Well, that might get me to reflect. You're not telling me what you think is going on because you realize you don't know, but you're puzzled. You say, David, what's going on? And I'm like, oh, what I realize is that I guess I tend to get competitive, particularly with men. So I'm learning something. I'm not only learning the impact of my behavior, but I'm learning something about me. So I don't have to have it all figured out. What we say is, if you know your feelings and you can identify the behavior, you're 90% there.
Let's talk about that, David. We're all taught language in a formal way, English, the alphabet, the grammar. tell us a little bit about the vocabulary of emotions, you know, where do we start, and you know, what's a good place for us to get a sense of what that the wheel of emotions looks like? Is there an approach that you suggest for people to start building that vocabulary?
I think there's two things. One is we would say, well, buy the book, and in the appendix is a long list of emotions, but that's not nearly as helpful. As what is really helpful is, as you go through the day, stop and say, I wonder what I'm feeling. We almost always are feeling something. Usually it's at such a low level, it doesn't register unless somebody cuts us off the road and we get into anger. But if you start to do that, you'll start to say, I'm feeling a little worried about this upcoming meeting. I'm really feeling, looking forward to meeting with Nasha. I'm really hoping that, and now you're starting to be more in touch with those low-level feelings, which often aren't low-level, but are ones that we have pushed down because we've sort of been trained, beware of feelings, leave feelings out of it. Emotions have no place, but emotions are everywhere.
And at some level, this requires a certain level of mindfulness, is that the right way to frame it? To observe ourselves, to observe the others. What do you suggest to leaders?
Excuse me, let me break in.
Please.
What I would really stress is mindfulness about ourselves.
Mm.
Mindfulness about others gets us into story making. We may want to be observant of others. Gee, that person went silent. That person seemed to frown. Can we observe their behavior and responses? But not be mindfulness about, I wonder what's going on with them, because that leads you down a dark rabbit hole of the stories you're making up.
I love the distinction that David makes about being mindful about ourselves, but being an observer of others and not going down a dark rabbit hole of stories that we start conjuring up. A related topic came up in my conversation with Tasha Yurick, a lady who studied self-awareness for several years. She speaks about how easily we can go down the rabbit hole of rumination if we ask the wrong question to ourselves.
It's not that introspection in and of itself is bad. It's just that the way most of us introspect is completely wrong. And the best way to illustrate this, you know, again, without having 2 hours to delve into it, is to think about probably what the most common introspective question is for most people, which is the question, why? So we might be trying to understand why we're in a bad mood. You know, you could say, why am I so upset after that conversation with my coworker? Or we might be trying to understand a bad outcome. You know, like, why didn't I get that promotion? Or we might be even trying to understand why we believe what we believe. You know, why do I want that promotion? But as it turns out, those questions, not only do they lead us away from true insight about ourselves, they give us a false sense of confidence about our knowledge. So, for example, Sigmund Freud was wrong. He believed in his work that people could access their unconscious, right? So like, really, why am I upset? If I just excavate, if I just think long and hard and ask that why question, I can find the answer. But what research has shown for decades, actually, is that no matter how hard we try, we can't access so many of those things. It's what I mentioned earlier about the behavior and emotion and knowledge blindness. Mm-hmm. So what happens is we find an answer that feels true, even if it's wrong. So that's an example of where it can lead us away from the truth rather than towards it. Another reason why is a really dangerous question, introspectively, is it has been shown over and over and over to depress us. You know, you think about it, like, why didn't I get that promotion? If you're not careful, you can start asking questions where the answers are, well, because I'm just a fundamentally bad person, and who would want to promote me? And you can kind of get stuck in, I call it the rabbit hole of rumination. And so what we wanted to do in our study was understand, okay, if why is the wrong question, what is the right question? You know, what are these unicorns doing differently than the rest of us? And it took us a little while to find this pattern, but we discovered that when unicorns introspected, they almost never asked why questions. They asked what questions. And at first I thought, like, oh, that's just a weird sort of fluke or a weird nuance. But as we started to look into it, it started to make a huge amount of sense. So one example would be, you know, going back to the question, why didn't I get that promotion? Mm-hmm. Unicorns, if they were in that situation, wouldn't ask themselves that question. Here's some questions they might have asked instead. What did I learn that can help me be better positioned in the future? Or what can I do to close the gap between, you know, where I thought I was and where I need to be? Or what support can I enlist from the people around me to help me, you know, achieve this goal the next time I set it? Or, you know, going back to why am I so upset about that conversation with my coworker? They might instead ask, well, what part of that situation did I own? Or what can I do differently in the future to avoid that kind of conversation with that person? And so what we found was asking what instead of why really helps us avoid so many of the pitfalls of introspection, where we, you know, we're excavating for the truth that we're never going to find, and we're focusing on our problems and feeling victimized and disempowered. So I think what I loved about that is it's a really tangible tool that I think we can take away. It seems subtle, but the difference is just huge. And I'm speaking from personal experience as I've started to use that as well.
If it's hard for us to understand our why, going back to what David says, we can very well imagine how far off the mark we might be in trying to decipher another person's why. As he says, we may do well to focus only on others' behaviors and try not to second-guess the other person's intent. Thank you for listening.